Almost. Feels like afternoon for me. My apologies. Generally speaking, I would like to be here for all the sessions, and certainly I wanted to be here for Ben Standing. I asked him to switch with me. I figured more people would come when they saw that Ben Standing was at this slot. So I knew that. But in serious, I had a conference call with the Rabbi Sachs Fellowship Foundation that I'm a part of that was running for about 2 hours this morning that I just ended, or is ending now. So I asked her by Standing to switch with me. A incredible thank you to the Kashitsky family, Serena and David, for sponsoring this morning's program in memory of Riva Kashitsky. A thank you as well to the Dean, Rabbi Sonnenberg, the Rosh Kollel, Rabbi Mann, for their leadership and really what they've done this year with Beit Midrash Zichron Dov. Beit Midrash Zichron Dov has become, over the last decade plus, an absolutely amazing, incredible source of Torah inspiration, and really, in particular, in many ways, a reflection of the Dati Lumi nature of the religious Zionist focus of our community. And both Rabbi Sonnenberg and Rabbi Mann continue to lead our Beit Midrash. We will always have an amazing and immense hakaras hatov to Rabbi Turchiner, who, of course, was with us for this past Shabbos and started us off this morning in what I'm sure was an incredibly beautiful and inspiring shiur for building this Beit Midrash and for making it what it is today. And Baruch Hashem, thankfully, we're able to continue to teach Torah and to grow in the Torah that's being learned. So I want to focus really just in the next 25 minutes on what I consider to be an incredible story in Sefer Yehoshua, but one that in many ways I think is so relevant today and to some of the issues that are going on in Israel right now in the context of the war and some of the challenging and difficult decisions that Israel is making and will continue to have to make in the weeks and months ahead. And that is the story of the Givonim. It's perhaps somewhat of a famous story. It's a story that many people have learned in Sefer Yehoshua. We'll spend a little bit of time on just the basic text to make sure that people are familiar with it. But then we're going to go into really what is the existential question and to set the stage for this. And so that when we're looking at and reading some of the text and some of the story, I want you to think about already the central question that we will focus on. And that is, and I'm sort of giving a little bit of a preview, why is it that the Givonim had to trick Yehoshua and the Jewish people? Why couldn't they simply approach Yehoshua, approach the Jewish people, and simply say, here's the story, we want to be peaceful, we want to be slaves to you, we want to work for you, we're prepared to accept whatever terms you are prepared to offer us. Please, let us join you. Don't attack us. Don't kill us. Why did they have to resort to subterfuge and really exercise a ruse in order to accomplish their goals? That's the question we're going to try to answer. And now I want to look at some of the text. So the story starts off in Perek Tet in Sefer Yehoshua, when basically Yehoshua has already destroyed Yericho and he's already attacked Ai. And I don't have a map to show you, but if you go just across, if you go a little bit west, from when the Jewish people crossed into Eretz Yisrael, they attacked Yericho, they attacked Ai, and then just northwest of exactly where that is, you'll find Givon. Very, very short distance, but yet, they weren't there yet. So we look at a map and we see, oh, well, it's right there. They should have known where they were coming from. But yet, if you're the Jewish people and you're in the desert and all you're seeing is desert all around you, and people show up, you have no idea where they are. So what happens? Pasuk Gimel. V'yoshvei Givon shamu et asher asai Yeshua liyericho l'ai. They heard what Yehoshua did. And they started to get nervous. Pasuk Dalet, Vayasu gam hema be'arama, Vayelchu vayitztayru vayikhu sakim balim lechamureihem v'noadot yain balim umibukim umitzorurim. They use cunning. They use trickery. And they create a disguise. And they take these worn out sacks. And they start to walk. And what happens? Pasuk Vav, Vayelchu al Yehoshua el hamachane ha-gilgal Vayomru elav ve'el ish Yisrael me'eretz rechoka banu. They come to Yeshua and they say, listen, we have come from a distant land and we'd like to make a Brit. We'd like to make a pact with you. Okay? Why do they preface by saying we've come from a distant land? Because if they were part of Israel, if they were coming from within the borders of Israel, Yeshua is not allowed to make a pact with them. Yeshua is commanded that he has to destroy the land, he has to conquer everything. And in the context of that, he would be prohibitive immediately from making any sort of a pact with them. So they have to try to create a sense of, don't worry, we're not a threat to you. We're not from there. We're from far away, from a distant place entirely. Okay, Pasuk Zion, the story continues. Vayomer Ish Yisrael Achivi Ulai Bekir Biata Yoshev. You see that they already were concerned a little bit that maybe they are from within our borders. Maybe they're not as far as we think. Vayomer Yeshua Vadecha Nachnu Vayomer Yeshua Miatem Umeayin Tavo. He asks them again, "Who are you? And where do you come from?" And again, if we had more time, we'd expound some of these individual words and some of the actual psukim and sentences, because there's a lot here. The commentaries on the spot bring a lot in each of these psukim. Vayomer Elav Me'eretz Rechoka Me'od. They repeat it. Bo'olav Adekel L'shem Hashem Pasuk Ten. I'm in the middle of Ki Shamanu Shamo Ve'et Kol Asher Asa B'Mitzrayim, which is also interesting. We heard about everything you did to Mitzrayim, hearkening all the way back to what the Jewish people did when they crossed the Yam Suf, and demonstrating a sense of historical knowledge around what the reputation that Klal Yisrael had associated with it. And therefore, Pasuk Yod Ve'etein Kol Asher Asa L'Shnei Malchei Amori, etc. He talks about what they did to the kings of the Amori, to Sichon and to Og, etc. And you continue down into the story. They continue to discuss it amongst themselves. They say, Pasuk Yud Bez, Zelach Meinu, Cham Hitztainu Oto Mibateinu Biyom Tzeitainu Lelechad Aleichem, Ve'ata Hine Yavesh, Vayanu Kudim. Look, our bread, it's dry, it's old, it's crumbly. It has these dots on it. He's trying to demonstrate and show how far they've traveled. Yud Gimel Ve'elu No'adot Hayayin Asher Maleinu Chadashim V'hinei Hitbashu Hitbaku Ve'ata Simloteinu V'na'aleinu Balu Mirov HaDerech HaMe'od. They say, look at our clothing, look at our shoes. It's tattered, it's ripped, it's worn. Everything is so old. Again, trying to show that we've come a long way. We're exhausted. What happened? Yudali Vayichu Anashim Mitzeidam Ve'et Pi Hashem Lo Sha'alu. So right over there, that we're told that Pi Hashem Lo Sha'alu, that they did not ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does that mean? Maybe they didn't consult the Urim V'Tumim. It's interesting, Yehoshua's name is not specifically mentioned here. They come to Yehoshua originally, and Yehoshua is going to become a part of it later on as well. But it's a question as to why he goes in and out of the story versus the elders. And Pasuk Tedvav, Vayas Lehem Yehoshua Shalom, Vayichrot Lehem Brit Lachayotam, Vayishavu Lehem Nisiei Haida. Yeshua creates a friendship with them. He makes a brit with them. He does not kill them. And he says, okay, I accept your terms. We will have an alliance of sorts, and all will be good. And then right away, Pasuk Tet Zion, they discover the ruse. Vayehi mikseh shloshet yamim achri asher kartu lahem brit vayishamu ki krovimim elav ubikirbohim yoshvim. They realize that no, they are close, and they're living right there within them. And they get all upset about it. They don't know what to do. Pasuk Yotet. Vayomer kol nisim al kol ha'idah. Anachnu nishmanu lehem b'Hashem Elokei Yisrael v'ata lo nuchal lingo bahem. What do you want us to do now? We promised. We swore. We made a brit. We can't touch them. Pasuk Chaf zot naaseh lehem b'echyeh otam v'lo yihyeh aleinu ketzef al ha'shvua asher nishmanu lehem. We have to spare their lives. We can't go against the oath that we swore to them. We have no choice. Pasuk Chavbet, Vayikru lehem Yeshuva, Yedaber elem lemor, Lama remitim otanu? Why'd you trick us? Lama rechokim anachnu mikem me'od ve'atem bikirbeinu yoshvim? You do live here. You are sitting here. You were wrong. You should not have tricked us in the way you did. Pasuk Chav Gimel, and that comes the curse. Ve'ata arurim atem ve'lo yicharet michem eved v'chot ve'etzim v'shov ve'mayim lebeis elokei. You're going to be these chot ve'etzim, these shov ve'mayim. You're going to be slaves. You're going to be subjugated. And this is going to be your future. Vayanu et Yehoshua v'yomer ki hugad hugad lavdecha et asher tziva Hashem elokeicha et Moshe avdo latet lehem et kol ha'eretz u'lashmid et kol yoshvei ha'eretz v'pneichem v'nira me'od l'nafshotenu v'pneichem v'naaseh et hadvar hazeh. They basically said, okay, we're going to do what you say. We have no choice. We're going to do what you say. Ve'ata hinenu biyadcha ketov ki'yashar b'necha lasot lanu asa. We're at your mercy. Do to us what you want, whatever you say. Ve'yaslahem came, ve'yatzelo tam yad be'yisrael v'lo hargum. And they were not killed. And this was their future. And this is how they were made ad hayom hazeh. Now, that's the story. At first glance, it's an interesting story. It's a fascinating story. There's so much to talk about here. But I want to focus on one very important question, as I mentioned, is why did they have to do this? They accepted the terms in the end of the day. They came to Yehoshua and they said, okay, we'll be Chotvei Eitzim, we'll be Shovei Mayim. Not a bad deal. Otherwise, we would have been killed. So if that's the case, why go this route? Why have to provide this whole form of trickery and the whole story and everything else, and even more so, to some extent, in the context of thinking about this story and looking at what they did, had they asked for that from the beginning, would it have been accepted or not? So the whole question in many ways hinges on Sefer Dvarim Perakov. Okay? We are in the middle of Parsha Shoftim. Okay, next page, top of the next page, and a number of psukim that so very much relate to where we are today right now. Torah tells us, Ki teitzei lemilchama aloidecha ve'ra'ita sus ve'rechav am rav imcha lo tira mehem ki Hashem elokecha imcha hamalacha me'eretz Mitzrayim. This is the first pasuk, just to set the stage. Don't worry, you will be fine. Skip ahead 10 psukim. Ki tikrav alir lihi lachem alecha ve'karach alechu shalom. Torah tells us that when you approach a town to attack it, you have to start off by asking them for peace. You have to see if they want to be peaceful or not. And by the way, one piece to think about that we're going to come back to at the end is look at how far Klal Yisrael go to avoid a Chilul Hashem. Meaning in the ready in the story of Givon, they could have said, you know what, this was a Mekach Tot. This was a deal that was done with tricksters, with people who we can't trust. And therefore, we're not held by it. We have no responsibility over it. And we can go back on it and we can kill them. But, Ada Yom Hazeh, the Jewish people are so nervous about creating a Chilul Hashem. There's a feeling, a sense of, we're going to do what's right. Irrespective of whether other people would act the same way. Doesn't matter whether they would treat us this way or not. We are going to do what's right, what's good, what's proper in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu because it's the right thing to do. Continuing on the Psukim. Torah tells us you have to make a peace offering. First and foremost, Vaya im shalom tancha upatcha lach vaya kol ha'aman imsa ba yihiyu lecha lemas ve'abducha. And by the way, if they accept your peace, this is Torah. This is from Sefer Dvarim. People have to become slaves. Pasuk Yud Bet, v'im lo tashlim imach ve'asati imcha milchama v'tzarta aleha. But if they don't surrender, and they don't accept peace, v'natzna Hashem elokecha biyadcha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help you win. And they will all die. But these are the men. Only the women and the children and the spoils of war. Yud Gimel, Tedvav rather. I skipped the pasuk. Kain ta'aseh l'chol ha'arim ha'rechokam mikha me'od asher lo me'areh ha'goyim ha'ela heina. This is the key pasuk to the entire story, and this is the pasuk that's going to lead to a machloket between Rashi and the Rambam that we're going to look at in just 2 minutes, which is going to guide us in two different directions. Let's look closely at this pasuk, okay? Kain ta'aseh, so too you should do, to all the towns, you can look at the English, that lie very far from you, towns that do not belong to nations hereabout. Pasuk Ted Zion. In the towns of these later peoples, however, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you, you can't allow anyone to live. Now, what does that mean? Is that going back on the entire story, meaning in effect that when you offer peace, you're only offering peace to people who are outside of your borders. You're only offering peace to people who are not right within the Shiva Amamim that are living within Israel, who are sitting outside of Israel, and that people who are inside of Israel, there's no requirement to offer peace, you go straight to war, option A, or option B, no. This is for when they say no, meaning that the difference is whether you kill all the males or not, meaning that if they accept peace no matter what. But if they're from the Shiva Amamim who are living right there, and, they do not accept peace, then you have to kill everyone. Lo techaya kol neshama. Everyone has to die. The men, the women, the children. You destroy everything. It's not just a question of just the men. Ki, Yud Zayin, Hachareim, Tachrimim, Hachiti, Hamori, Aknani, Aprizi, Hachivi, Hayivusi, Kasher, Tzivcha, Hashem, Lokecha, Leman, Asher, Lo, Yil, Medu, La'asot, La'otchem, La'asot, Kekol, Toivot, Asher, Azul, Eloheihem, V'chatatem, Hashem, Lokechem. Ultimately, we are worried about the influences that these nations will have on Klal Yisrael. There's a recognition and an understanding that Klal Yisrael will be impacted and will be affected by all of these nations, and that's something that we are concerned about. And frankly, it's something that, you see, Jewish people are still battling with and struggling with today. How do we remain a strong democratic society with other nations living amongst us? How do we remain a Jewish majority, but treat everyone properly and fairly? How do we balance these very difficult questions that exist today and continue in our day? Now, what's interesting is, and I copied for you one piece of from Rav Hirsch. This comes actually from the Chumashim that we have in the back. We have Hirsch Chumashim, we have the Rav Hirsch Chumashim. So this paragraph is in exact English translation, literally I typed it myself, from a very, very powerful statement that Rav Hirsch gives on Dvarim Perek Zayin Pasuk Tet Zayin, where he says, and then we're going to look at Rashi and the Rambam, these repeated admonitions not to show any mercy to the Canaanite population may demonstrate how little such behavior normally accords with the character and the purpose of the Jewish people. The tendency of the Jewish people is and always should be to show mercy to all living things. And the Jewish people should view such merciless kindness against the Canaanite population as an exception, explicitly commanded by God and necessitated by special circumstances described in the text. And the reason I thought this is important and critical is because chas v'shalom should we read these psukim as a license to kill indiscriminately and to cause indiscriminate harm. The Torah is giving us very, very prescribed and specific instructions that are unique to very specific circumstances. Okay, so now let's take a deep breath and let's look at the next page, the top, Rashi and the Rambam, because this is where it really gets exciting. Rashi has a very, very short comment based on the Sifri. It's based on the Medrash. It's not even, that he's coming up with it himself, which sometimes happens. On the way we started, on Pasuk Yud, Pasuk 10, verse 10, in Perakof, in chapter 20, where he says, Ki tikrav el ir, right? Right at the beginning of the Pasuk. What does Rashi say? Bimelchemet harishut hakatuv medaber. Rashi tells us that we are talking about an optional battle, an optional war. Meaning that, when is it? You go back to the Pasuk, right? You go back to the Pasuk, and the Pasuk says that, Ki tikrav el ir lihilochem aleha dekarata aleha l'shalom. You have to call out for peace. When do you have to call out for peace? Well, very simple, says Rashi, Bimelchemet harishut hakatuv medaber. You have to call out for peace when you're talking about an optional war. What's an optional war? Not what's going on in Sefer Yehoshua. Not when God commands us that we're supposed to go into Eretz Yisrael and we're supposed to destroy the seven nations and take conquest and conquer the land. That's only referring to an optional war. And Rashi continues along those lines to demonstrate that. But let's look at the Rambam. The Rambam at the beginning of Hilchot Malachim, Perek Vav, Chapter Vav, the Rambam writes the following. You have the Hebrew, you have the English. We'll go back and forth a little bit. Ein osin milchama im adam ba'olam ad shekorin lo shalom. The Rambam says your Jewish people are enjoined against participating in a war unless they introduce that war with a call for peace. They start off with peace. Echad milchemet harishut ve'echad milchemet hamitzvah. It doesn't matter whether or not it's a milchama that is optional or a milchama that's considered milchamet mitzvah. Either way, you have to start off by calling for peace. Shnei emar, ki tigrav el ir lihilochem aleha, dekarata aleha l'shalom. Quotes our pasuk. A mefurish exact machloka between the Rambam and the Rashi in exactly this point. Im yishlimu v'kiblu sheva mitzvah shenistav b'nei noach aleihem, ein horgim mehem nishama v'harei hein lemas. And in fact, he starts to set out the terms by which we can accept their peace offering or their acceptance of peace, what it has to be based on. Number one, they have to accept the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach. They have to be willing to pay a price. Associated with Shnei Amar, Yielach Alamas V'Avaducha. They have to pay taxes. They have to be slaves, whatever the terms are. Kiblu Aleim HaMas V'lo Kiblu HaAvdut Oshe Kiblu HaAvdut Lo Kiblu Mas Ein Shon Lehem Ad Shei Kiblu Shneihem. They have to accept everything, says the Rambam. They have to accept whatever the taxes are, whatever the slavery is, whatever the commandments are. Whatever it is has to be accepted by this nation in order to grant them the peace that they are working towards. The avdut sheyakablu hu shehu nivzim vishvalim lemata velo yarimu rosh b'Yisrael el yukavushim tachat yadam. Rambam continues. He discusses more about how you should do it and how it should be prepared, etc. And you can read the rest of the Rambam by yourself. He talks about Shlomo HaMelech. It's an interesting Rambam. So right off the bat now, we have a fascinating machlokes between Rambam and Rashi. And depending on which side you accept, you'll understand the Givonim very well. So if you accept Rashi in the context of this argument, it's very clear why the Givonim had to trick the Jewish people. Why did the Givonim have to trick the Jewish people? They had no other option. This was not a Milchemet Rashut. This was a Milchemet Mitzvah. So since this was a Milchemet Mitzvah, the Givonim said we have two options. Either we try to find a way to trick them and hopefully save our lives and maintain some status as slaves, or they're going to kill us anyway. We saw what they did to Yericho. We saw what they did to Ai. We don't have a prayer. Option A. The Rambam, though, you have a very good question. According to the Rambam now, within this story of Givon, why didn't they try to sue for peace? And by the way, could you say, according to the Rambam, that this is a question on his position? You could very easily look at the story of Givon and say, Rambam, makes no sense. Clearly you're wrong. How do you justify and how do you explain the behavior of the Givonim if you believe that they had to sue for peace first? So if you look further on, next page, this is later on in the Rambam, in Hilchot Malachim, Perek Halacha Hey, the Rambam asks the question. The Rambam starts off by saying, Shloshak Tavim Shalach Yoshua Ad Shelo Nichnas La'aretz. There were three letters that were sent before they went in. And what does he say? Harishon shalach lam misherotza livroach livroach. Anyone who wants to flee, anyone who wants to run away, you have the opportunity, you can go ahead and run and leave. And afterwards, v'chazer shalach misherotza lahashlim yashlim. Anyone who wants peace, you can accept peace. And then finally, misherotza lasot milchama yaseh. Anyone who wants to stay and fight, we're coming. And you can stay and fight, we'll be there. Im Kain, Ipne Ma Ha'arimu Yoshve Givon. The Rambam is not going to allow this question not to be asked. It's so obvious that the question exists within his opinion. So if that's the case, why did these people of Givonim, why did they trick? Lefisha Shalach Lahem Bichlal Velo Kiblu. Because what happened? Originally, he sent them the message as part of one of the nations, and they didn't accept it. Meaning that they didn't realize, Rambam continues, "V'lo yadu mishpat Yisrael v'dimu sheshuv ein potrim lehem l'shalom." They didn't realize. They thought that they would not be offered a settlement again. They thought they had a one-shot deal. They thought they had the opportunity to accept it at that moment. And if they missed accepting at that moment, they lost their opportunity. They were finished. And on the most basic level, the Rambam gives an answer which works for himself. Okay. They had the opportunity to settle for peace. They had the opportunity to accept the peace offering that was being offered, but they missed it. Now the Ravid, right on the Rambam, quotes this Rambam, Amar Avraham, and he says, no, that shelo shalach lehem Yehoshua lahashlim ela ad shelo avru et hayardin avar achar michen ein mekavlenoto. The one piece, it's not in your sources, I'm sorry, I neglected to include it. The one piece that the Ravid argues with the Rambam is he says it wasn't about the timing of the initial moment that the letter was sent, but rather they thought they had until the Jewish people crossed the Jordan. Meaning up until the point that they crossed the Jordan River and they started their battle with Yericho and they destroyed Ai, there was a short window in which the nations had the ability to accept the peace. And once they crossed the Jordan River, once they started their battles, at that point, the timing was up. So we have two answers at a minimum from the Rambam, the Ravid, as to how to understand this piece of the Rambam. Now, I saw a few other pieces that I didn't include the sources. Some of them I saw over the weekend in particular that I thought was fascinating that I wanted to share with you. Okay? First of all, and it's a little bit in Yonah Dioma, in the context of some of the Parshios we're doing, the Radak, and you can look it up inside, it's beautiful. The Radak writes something I thought was fascinating. The Radak writes of David Kimchi that really what happened, the Givonim knew that they had the opportunity to ask for peace, but the Jewish people did not develop a reputation of trustworthiness, and they didn't think they could trust them. Why? Why not? Again, I wouldn't say it. The Radak said it, okay? The Radak said because Givon are a group of people who come from Chivi. Chivi is connected to Shechem. Okay? Genealogy. They remembered from the great-grandfather what happened the last time that the Jewish people were told by Shechem that we will be peaceful, that we will join with you. Shimon and Levi went ahead and they used it as an opportunity to weaken them, creating a false sense of hope, creating a false belief towards peace. And then at their weakest state, Shimon and Levi went in and decimated the whole nation, destroyed everyone, killed everyone. So in the end of the day, says the Radak, the Givonim knew that on paper they were being offered the opportunity to be peace, to be at peace with the Jewish people, and they understood the terms. But the same way that all these kings got together before Givon, and they all came together, and they all declared war, and they said, that's it, we're going to fight, they felt they had no choice, because they didn't feel that the peace offering was real and was trustworthy. And they said, look at what happened, look at what Shimon and Levi did, we have no option. So they figured, you know what? We have two choices. Either we try to trick them and hope that then they hold up that end of the bargain, or we're finished anyway, so we have nothing to lose. And when a people has nothing to lose, then they're going to do whatever they can. But what stood the test of time, and to me this is a beautiful message that I was very inspired by in the context of this story, is that in the end of the day, the Givonim knew, or at least were willing to bet, that the Jewish people would care significantly about the concept of their word, of a shvua, of a commitment, of a brit. And they knew that if they were able to somehow trick Yehoshua and the Zakenim and convince them somehow that they need to come together and come and become at one with them and accept this peace offering, then the risk of a Chilul Hashem would be so great that even though other nations might not do it, even though other people might go back on their word and they might lie, and again, it's hard to understand this in the context of Shimon and Levi, and that's part of what Yaakov gets so upset about. That's another story for a different time. But they knew they had a good chance at it, because the Jewish people would be so concerned with Chilul Hashem. And to me, it's a very inspiring message. What's so timely about this story is we see so many of these questions coming up right now. They're coming up right now in the context of what we have is Medinat Yisrael, and so many of the stories that go on in the Nevi'im and throughout Tanakh, we are living in our present day. And we're having questions on Melchemet Mitzvah where we see the Jewish army. It's an incredible thing, and our tefillahs continue to go for all of our brothers and sisters who are in Israel. But we're literally living Tanakh in our lives right now in terms of seeing what's happening on the battlefield and looking at these stories and thinking about these questions, and can there be peace, and should there be peace, and how should peace be perpetuated, and what do you have to do and what not, and how do you create a Chilul Hashem versus a Kiddush Hashem, and how does a Jewish army act, and how does a Jewish army behave? And the fact that these questions are being posed to rabbis and that they are part of the culture of what's happening, therein lies something I think that's really, really very beautiful. And I think it should motivate us to recognize that we're literally living through history, and we're seeing the Atchalta de Geula, we're seeing the Reishit Smichat Geulatenu in our own days, in literally in front of us in our own lives. Again, an incredible thank you to the Kashitsky family for this morning's sponsorship, but more so also, of course, to Rabbi Sonnenberg for putting this whole program together and for working so diligently on really an amazing day of learning for our community. Kol hakavod and thank you.